Okay, I really hope that this works, that nothing goes terribly wrong, because for those of you who haven't been either myself or Megan for the past 25 minutes, due to a couple different technical difficulties, I have two laptops open on my desk right now, which my desk is not large enough to contain multiple laptops and a microphone and the other junk that I have on my desk. So the lap, like, my work computer is like halfway on my personal computer, so that I can record audio on my personal computer and call Megan on my work computer.
That's
so
the life we're living right now, people.
This is the life that we're living right now. Here we are.
Here we go.
Yeah, Megan, do you have anything to contribute, or?
I mean, I'm just tired. It's been a whole ass day, but I'm excited to talk about ridiculous face people.
Yes.
And their ridiculous problems and escape my own.
I love escaping my own problems by focusing on Clark Griffin's problems instead.
That's the sweet spot, man.
It is. All right, you want to get into it then?
I would love to.
Hello there, and welcome to A Bit Much. It feels weird to do this intro when, like, we didn't really talk about anything in the pre-music section. it's like I've welcomed you into my house, and we've had small talk already, and then I'm like, hello, welcome to my house. Anyway, my name is Jenna.
And I'm Megan, and on A Bit Much, whenever we goddamn feel like it, we watch a few episodes of 100, and then we talk about it. For your entertainment, and mostly for our friend Angelin. She's our
yes.
Fan. We love her.
Also, I would say for our own mental health, we talk about the 100.
Absolutely, absolutely.
All right. Well, we started off season 4, which was very exciting. You know, like you said, we do this podcast on whatever schedule works for us, and I had kind of been slacking off or not, you know, pushing us forward to record another episode just because I had other stuff going on. But then I was like, you know what? I really want to watch season 4. So I guess I need to text Megan and we need to schedule a recording time. So you want to start with your summaries?
Sure. So here's episode 1, season 4, called Echoes. In the confusion after the City of Light falls, and in the absence of a commander, Echo leads Asgaeta in a coup to take control of the throne and declares war on Sky Crew, blaming them for bringing the chip to Polis. It is soon revealed that King Rowan is still alive, and Clark and Abby manage to save his life while Bellamy distracts Echo by negotiating Sky Crew's false surrender. Rowan takes back control of Asgaeta, and despite Echo pressuring Rowan to kill Clark, take her power, and rule all of the Grounders, Rowan decides to reform Lex's coalition and include Sky Crew as the 13th clan when Clark gives him the flame. Clark and Bellamy reveal that the world will end in 6 months when the remaining nuclear reactors fail. The two of them return to Arcadia to work on a solution. Episode 402, Heavy Lies the Crown. In Polis, Octavia learns that one of the clan ambassadors plans to challenge Rowan to single combat for the right to rule, claiming he will avenge the Grounders who died under Ali's command by declaring war on Sky Crew. Echo, Kane, and Abby try to convince Rowan to name a champion to fight in his stead as he is still too weak from his bullet wound, but he refuses. When Kane's attempt at diplomacy fails, Octavia assassinates the ambassador, securing Rowan's hold on power and his alliance with Sky Crew. In Arcadia, Clark and the others figure out that they can survive the coming nuclear fallout in the Ark if they repair and seal it. Bellamy leads a group to recover a machine from Farm Station that can keep the Ark stocked with enough water to sustain all of Sky Crew through the 5 years it will take for the ground to be livable again. When they arrive, they discover that a tribe of Asgeda have taken farm station survivors as slaves, and they make the difficult decision to blow up the water machine to help them escape. Without the machine, the Ark will only sustain 100 people through the nuclear fallout. After much deliberation, Clark decides to tell everyone that they need to repair the Ark so that they can all survive, motivating them to work as hard as they can while she finds a solution to save them all, and the Grounders too.
Season 3, Episode 4 is called The Four Horsemen. As Arcadia prepares for the radiation, Clark is tasked with choosing who will stay in the ship, but avoids it. Jaha knows about a potential bunker where they could survive, and Clark and Bellamy join him to investigate it. In Polis, the flame is stolen from Rowan, and he has Octavia find it without letting anyone know. But the flamekeeper who stole it turns out to be Indra's daughter, Gaia. Octavia lets her keep the flame and lies to Rowan, claiming that the flame was destroyed. Sick grounders from Luna's rig show up at Arcadia with radiation sickness, signaling that the radiation could be a serious threat within only 2 months. Murphy and Amori are camping out in the woods, and Murphy goes to Arcadia to steal food, but discovers the imminent threat and limited space in the Ark, so he brings Amori back so they can angle for a spot when the radiation comes. The Doomsday Bunker turns out to have been defective and will not protect anyone from radiation. All of Luna's people die except for her, proving that Nightbloods might be able to weather higher levels of radiation.
Nice.
Thank you. All right. So, the first episode is called Echoes.
Which is silly.
It is silly. Yeah, like, Clark saves everyone from the City of Light, and then just immediately on to the next crisis. Like, literally, like, not even the next crisis, because the next crisis is that, like, radiation is going to kill them all, but, like, a more immediate crisis of, like, Asgeda is taking over the city and, you know, declaring war on Sky Crew.
Right, there are several moments in this one episode where they're like, we can't worry about 6 months from now, people are trying to kill us today.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, like, it's funny, because I don't know why, and, like, I forgot, because, like, it's been a while since I've watched this season, so, like, mm-hmm. in my head, I was like, oh, they went through this terrible thing, and, like, it was something that they both experienced, like, Grounders and Sky Crew, so, like, it's gonna bring them together. And then I was like, oh, wait, no.
That's not how this show works. That's far too optimistic.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Echo is just pretty much the worst here. Yeah. Like, she... Basically, she starts being like, Antari was the last commander, and she's dead now, but she was Asgeda, so, like, Asgeda is in charge of the city. And then one of the ambassadors is like, no, the city will be ruled by a coalition of ambassadors until a new commander can rise. And Echo's like, nope, cuts her throat, and is like, we're in charge now.
It was funny because, like, the ambassadors, I'm pretty, like, pretty close to her exact words, were like, if you want to take, like, if you want to control Polis, you'll have to take it by force. And then she immediately cuts her throat. And it, like, just took me back to middle school when there were these two girls who were, like, in each other's face. And one girl asked, do you want to fight? And the other girl answered her by smashing her face into a window. And I was like, that's not, that looks familiar.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
So she did take it by force. Not a lot of force, just one, you know, stroke of her sword through a neck. But.
And just the fact that Asgeda has, like, an army there already.
Yeah, and everyone's just terrified of Asgeda. Like, and I think, you know, that's valid. I'm also afraid of Asgeda.
I mean, yeah, they go around just slashing ambassadors' throats in front of large crowds. Yeah, so then we get some, I mean, like, everyone's dealing with this, but we do get some nice reunions, right? Indra, she's still alive, and, like, Octavia goes to her and finds her and makes sure she's alive. And then, like, Kane shows up and Indra and Kane hug, which I loved.
Yes.
And then... basically, Clark reveals kind of to their little inner circle the radiation is coming. Which, like, really early in the episode, Clark and Bellamy are talking about it. Yeah, like, Clark says something like, you're afraid, you know, because she just tells Bellamy right away, right when she comes back.
Yeah.
And then, so they're the only two people who know first. And she's like, you're afraid of how people will react. And he's just immediately like, yes. Like, obviously. Which is, I mean, that's like a lot of what we're dealing with throughout the rest of these episodes that we watch. Of like, who knows about the incoming threat of radiation? Mm-hmm. And like, when do you break that to the public? And how do you break it to the public?
All very good questions.
Yeah.
But yeah, so what happens is, you know, of course, Clark comes with a plan. So they're like, what do we do? They're like, they got as many Sky Crew people, like, you know, secretly and safely out of Polis as they could. And they're like, what are we going to do? And Clark's like, we're going to surrender. But, like, tricky trick, because they're not going to surrender.
Yeah.
Bellamy's going to, like, negotiate, quote unquote, with Echo, Wall, Abby, and, oh, I need to back up because we find Rowan. Somebody's just like, hey, here's a place. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And they're like, no, he's still alive. Shit. And so, you know, that gives Clark hope because she was like, oh, he's like my dude. Like, we're gonna, he was like an ally because he got shot trying to help her get rid of Allie. So she was like, he's our ally. You know, if we can get him to live, then he'll be on our side and he'll, you know, tell Echo to back off and, you know, we can trust him. So she's like trying to heal him, and Echo's like, don't touch him. And she said, she orders her people to take him away. And so that's when Clark is like, we'll surrender, and Bellamy will distract Echo and her guards while Abby and Clark and try to heal Rowan, and Octavia, like, you know, does all the murder and
right, which actually, like, the really cool part of his plan, which I loved, was that, like, the first thing they did was Jaha brought, like, this wrapped body up to the throne room and was like, you know, this is Antari's body. Like, she should be with her people. And Echo was like, throw it with the other bodies and capture Jaha. Like, just, like, complete lack of respect or care for it. But then, like, they leave and the, like, body moves and, like, Octavia climbs out to then, like, allow Clark and Abby in, which that was, like, I love the sneaky, clever plan.
Yes, it was so cool. It was like she cut her way out of these shrouds. Like, it was a cocoon. Mm-hmm. It was super cool. So, but they are interrupted. Well, Abby gets to him, gets the bullet out, but then they're interrupted. And I can't remember why.
I think basically, like, Bellamy doesn't do that good of a job stalling. Like, in fact, he does quite a bad job stalling with Echo. Then Echo, like, figures out that, like, wait a minute, something is up. And they go back to the throne room and they find, you know, Abby and Clark and Octavia in there. And they're like, oh, you were trying to kill the king. And they're like, no, we were trying to save the king.
Right. And then they're, like, about to cut Clark's throat. And then Rowan's like, stop. Because he's standing up. Abby's like, you shouldn't be standing up. And he literally ignores her. And then, so he saves their lives. And then, basically, like, Echo is trying to convince him that he should not be in an alliance with these people. Mm-hmm. His hold on the throne is shaky at best. Because, like, most of Alcanda does not like him. Like, he's been banished for, like, 3 years by his really terrible mother, the previous Ice Queen, who very famously was killed by Lexa, the dopest thing I've ever seen.
Yes.
We've already talked about that. But so he, like, just got the throne, and most people don't want him to have it. So, but Echo's his supporter, and so she's like, you know, in order to cement your place as one, king of Asgaeta, and then two, like, as the new commander, like, you need to kill Clark so you can, like, take her one-hit of powers and, you know, prove to people that you're strong and that they should follow you. And he was like, I don't want to do that. And she's like, fuck's sake. Because he doesn't want to be like his mother. He wants to be a good, noble king, which I really am very happy about. It really warms the cockles of my heart.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so that's kind of, like, their whole thing. They go back and forth on this. And then Clark is trying to find a way to convince him to not listen to Echo, to stay in an alliance with Sky Crew, and to convince him to help them find a way to survive in 6 months.
Yeah. Also, like, just while this is going on, I love, because it's, like, you know, Murphy and Imori, like, reunite after Imori's not chipped anymore. And first they're kind of like, yeah, we're just going to get the hell out of here. And then Murphy's like, wait, we should stick with my people because, like, they probably can provide a safety. And she's kind of like, okay. And then Murphy, like, walks up, sees that they're, like, in the middle of trying to, like, save Rowan and, like, stall with Echo to, like, do this. And he's like, actually, fuck this. We're going to leave.
Oh, I just love John Murphy so much because he's just the ultimate like survivor. He's just gonna do whatever he can to stay alive and like respect, man. I get it.
Right. But so then Clark talks to Rowan and tells him about like the threat of the radiation. And first Rowan was like, oh, it's fine, we'll survive it, like we survived Prime File, like, we can do this. And she's like, no, you can't. And then he's like, okay, but, like, you have to understand how shaky my hold on power is. And she's like, we'll help you. And then she's like, okay, you know, I'm going to give you the flame, you know. And she's like, I wouldn't give you this if I wasn't serious about, like, you know, this oncoming threat and the fact that we need to work together and the fact that you need Sky Crew in order to survive.
Yeah. Basically, like, the only way we're going to get through this is with, like, science. And that's what we're good at.
Right. So she gives him the flame so that he can, you know, hopefully get more support from the Coalition because he's the one who's holding the flame, even if he's not, like, a real commander.
Yeah. And he agrees. And so Sky Crew has once again survived the unsurvivable, and they're fine. Echo's not happy with it, but she's gonna go along with it. And there's this really excellent scene in which, like, so it's, you know, Kane and Addie and Indra and Bellamy and Clark, and they're all just kind of talking about, you know, and Octavia's probably there too, and they're talking about, like, next moves, what are they gonna do? The adults and Octavia are going to stay in Polis to, like, you know, help with the Coalition and all that and be ambassadors and, you know, maybe some murder some people if we need to, which Octavia is always handy for. And then Clark and Bellamy are going to return to Arcadia to start working on this problem. Mm-hmm. But there's this amazing moment between Kane and Bellamy where Kane is, like, telling him who's, like, you know, you put it behind you, like, all the shit that you've done, you don't need to keep, like, sacrificing yourself, like, beating yourself up for it, like, in the past, don't look back, just look forward, just be a better man, and, like, just every day try to be better than you were yesterday. And, like, that means so much coming from Kane, who, like, at the beginning of the show was a complete asshole and, like, was the one who's like, we should kill 300 people without their consent. And, like, his transformation, like, his redemption arc, and just, like, him being a mentor to Bellamy in that sense of, like, yeah, I used to be a shit too, but, like, we can be better. And, like, it's just so good. Like, Bellamy's never had, like, a father figure. It just gets me right in the heart.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely true. And, like, I do feel like that, you know, Kane and Bellamy have had kind of similar trajectories in that sense. Because, like, yeah, when the calling happened, like, afterwards, first of all, like, Bellamy felt bad because, like, if he hadn't destroyed that fucking radio to save his own ass, like, those people may not have died. And then, like, once Kane discovered, like, that, it turns out Earth is survivable, we didn't need to kill those people. It's like they were both, you know, like, they kind of had that shared experience. Like, not shared because they didn't know the other one was having it, but they both had it, you know, like, in season one. And, yeah, like, Kane has grown a lot and clearly, like, yes, I love him as a mentor for that kind of experience.
And so also during this time, there are a few flashes to the arc where, why do I always forget her name? Monty's new.
Harper.
I'm sorry. I was going to say Miller, but I was like, no, Miller's the gay one.
Yeah.
It's Harper and Monty are, like, being cute. They're like, having sex is great. And Octavia is working on getting the mainframe back or whatever. It's a bunch of
Raven. IT talk. You just said Octavia.
And it's interesting because her and Jasper have a conversation of, like, it's interesting that you're doing all this coding when you're not a coder. Like, Allie upgraded your brain, mm-hmm. which is an interesting thing, but also I think just an excuse to make Raven even smarter than she was before.
Right.
Like, it's definitely like a plot pillow, like, you know, propping it up, you know? It's like, yeah. Oh, she's super smart because of Allie.
Right. I mean, definitely a plot, like, convenience. But, mm-hmm. like, also, yeah, kind of a cool idea that it's like, yeah, you went through this super traumatic, terrible thing, but, like, also it made you smarter. Like, you know, it is kind of an interesting, like, complicating factor, but I agree, mostly just a convenient plot device. Yeah.
And then there's a very, 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 very heartbreaking scene in which mm-hmm. you see Jasper. He puts a note that says Monty on, like, his dresser, and then he picks up a gun and puts headphones in his ears to listen to music, and then he sits down on a bunch of plastic tarps and is about to shoot himself in the head. And, like, just the idea that he tried to make his suicide attempt, like, easy to clean up is one of the saddest things I've seen in the entire world. And it was really very sad. And then, of course, he's interrupted because, hey, look, there's a new crisis. And it's, oh, that is heart-wrenching.
Yeah, I mean, it was just, like, it's been hard to watch Jasper for a long time. But, like, seeing this, that, like, yeah, they solve the Allie problem, but him being like, no, actually, I was happy when I was in the City of Light, and now you've taken that from me, and mm-hmm. life isn't worth living anymore is very heartbreaking. So anyway, then they all get called, you know, he gets interrupted by Monty, and they all get called to talk to Raven, and Raven tells them that the world is ending in 6 months, and then Jasper's just, he just, like, laughs, and he's like, cool, well, I guess I don't have to kill myself anymore. I'll be dead in 6 months anyway. I'll just enjoy my time until then.
Yup, which is also dark as fuck, but better than shooting yourself in the head, I guess.
Yeah. So then the only, well, I guess there's two more things to mention about this episode, which is that after, when Clark and Bellamy are leaving Polis, and Kane, you know, has that kind of discussion with Bellamy about, like, don't look back, like, you know, it's, you can do better in the future. And as they're walking away, Bellamy goes, okay, princess, now what? And I was like,
I had that moment, I was like, oh my gosh, yeah, it's been so long. They're, like, stupid little pet names. They're so fucking cute, Jenna, I can't handle it.
I know. See, there was that incredible moment. And then we get this little epilogue where we see Egypt, like, we see the pyramids being just devoured by radiation and some people just, like, getting killed immediately. So
disintegrated.
So that we know that the threat is encroaching.
Yeah, very upsetting.
Yeah. All right, episode 2?
Mm-hmm. Okay, yes, yes, yes. So, do we want to talk about Polis first?
Well, okay, the very first thing I want to talk about is that this episode opens up with a shot of a bioluminescent butterfly fluttering around, and I just, like, laughed, like, they were like, hey, remember back in season one when we said there were going to be weird animals and stuff? Hey, remember that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oops. Oops. We had more pressing things to talk about, apparently.
Yeah. Anyway, I guess then just to finish that scene, we see sort of a random grounder under the control of Allie, murder his whole family. And then, like, and he does this, like, right before Allie is shut off. So, like, when he has his own free will again, he just, like, sees his mother die, and he's already killed his brother and father. And, he, like, vows to get revenge on whatever made this happen.
Yeah. Super dark, super upsetting. It's like, spoilers for the movie, I think The Mist? could be called that, but I can spoil it for Jenna because she would hate to watch it. So it's like there's this movie, it's called The Mist, and all this mist comes and you can't see anything, and it's like monsters are all in the mist, and so people are like trapped in a grocery store, but then they like get in the car and they're like driving, and they run out of gas, and oh no, they're trapped in the mist, and so they have this gun and only has like 3 bullets, and there's 4 people. And so the, like, courageous man is like, okay, I'll kill, like, my father and my wife and my child to, like, spare them from the monsters. And then I'll be the one who's, like, torn apart by monsters. So he shoots all the people. And then he's the only one left. And then the mist clears. And then the military comes in and saves him. And it's like, oh, man, that is rough. So that's what it reminds me of.
This is, like, Greek-level tragic.
Nope. Anyway, feel free to cut that out. Yes, so that's a good setup for the main problem in Polis, which is we see Octavia being a super spy, and she's spying on conversations, and she overhears one of the ambassadors for the tribe that this kid comes from, which I cannot remember the name. It starts with a T, but it's
like it was Trishana Crew.
Okay. And so he's like talking big game. He's like, I'm gonna challenge Rowan in single combat, and then I'll be commander, and then like we'll take revenge on Sky Crew because they did this to us. And so Octavia's like, hey, this is a problem. And so and she was like, you know, he was like, oh, Rowan's like, so she goes to Rowan, tells him about this. And he goes, oh, that's a problem because, like, my bullet wound is still healing. I'm not that great of a fighter. And then, like, somebody, I can't remember, I think it's Octavia talking about, like, Luxa also kicked your ass when you were totally fine. So
right.
Maybe you shouldn't fight at all. Like, you should just name a champion. And he was like, I can't do that. My people already hate me. That would, like, totally disrespect me still, like, even more if I chose a champion instead of fighting myself. Like, that would, like, be the end of my rule, basically. And so Abby's like trying to do the best that she can to get him patched up, and he's like training with Echo, but he like just sucks because he's in so much pain, and that's just ramping up more and more. But like Kane is like, I got this. I love diplomacy. Kane is all about diplomacy now. He's like, I'm gonna go talk to this guy.
Yeah, it was like I was just fascinated by, like, he's like, let us talk to him, let's try diplomacy, whatever. But it's like, he doesn't, I just feel like Kane was just an idiot. Like, he straight up, like, shows up and is like, hey, can you not challenge the, like, king?
Pretty and please? Then,
yeah, like, pretty please? And then, like, the, you know, ambassador is like, well, if you're begging me not to, obviously he's gonna lose, so, like, of course I'm going to. Like, it was just, like, they didn't try to, like, trick him or, like, you know, bargain with him or figure out, like, you know, okay, what can we trade you to not do this or whatever. He was just like, can you please not?
And of course it doesn't work. And so Octavia, the solver of problems, goes to him, like, at night. He's alone. He's, like, eating dinner. And she comes to him. She's like, hey. He's like, hey, what are you doing in my house? She's like, don't worry about it. And then she's like, you should not fight Rowan, and, like, I won't hurt you. And he was like, haha, like, little girl, you can't hurt me. I'm a big warrior man. And she's like, no, for real, like, you should just walk away while you still can. And he's like, no. And then she takes, like, some sort of, like, I want to say, like, kebab skewer, and shoves it into his ear and into his brain and kills him instantly, and then, like, dabs up the blood so there's no evidence. He just looks like he just, like, keeled over while eating dinner, and she's like, boom, assassination done, and we're in the clear.
Yep.
And she shows up to the, like meeting of the ambassadors that he's supposed to be at. And that one kid is, like, looking at her and looking at the empty seat of his ambassador is like, that's a little suspicious. And then, you know, when Rowan is starting the meeting, he's like, where's the ambassador for whatever tribe that you said before?
And
then somebody comes in and is like, oh, hey, this guy is dead. And he, like, looks at Octavia. He's like, God damn it. He's, but problem solved. And Octavia's like, you're welcome. Stone cold.
Yes. Also, much more minor thing happening in Polis is that, like, we start with a scene of Cain and Abby in bed together.
Yeah.
And then there's this moment where she's like, oh, I gotta go check on Rowan because I'm the doctor. And then she is, like, hesitating with this, like, she has, you know, her wedding ring on a chain, like, and she is kind of, like, hesitating with it, like, oh, is this weird to, like, put this back on when I was just having sex with Cain? And, you know, Cain is like, hey, like, Jake is a part of who you are. Like, I'm not offended. Go for it. Which I thought was, like, really sweet and nice and, like, true, right? That it's, like, yes, Jake, you know, her husband, the father of her child, the man who she basically indirectly murdered, like, important part of her life. But then at the end of the episode, she's not wearing it anymore. And, like, he sees that.
And, like, smiles. And I'm like, yeah, and they, like, kiss. That.
Right. I was like, I thought that was, like, a nice gesture at the start. And it's like, because we don't get any introspection about it from Abby. Like, if she had explained, like, not just like, oh, yeah, well, I love this new guy now, so, like, fuck my old husband. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, but if she had explained maybe, like, you know what? Like, I wore that as, like, a reminder of my part in his death, or, like, it, you know, if there was, like, some other kind of emotional reason behind why she was like, no, now is the time to do it, other than just, like, well, Cain and I are fucking now, so it's weird, you know?
Right, yeah, if she was, like, or, like, she needed to move on, you know, if it was keeping her trapped in the past, like, I would have accepted any of that, but yeah. it looks bad.
Yeah.
It looks very much like you can only love one person the most and fuck everyone else. And, like, I hate that idea of love, so.
Right. It was just, it was very weird. So, meanwhile, back in Arcadia.
Oof, yeah. So, they're basically having a think tank moment. With mm-hmm. So, who knows about it? It's Clark, Bellamy, Octavia. Oh, sorry. I meant Raven. Raven, Monty, Jasper.
I think Harper knows about it, too.
Harper probably does, too. I think that's it.
I mean, then later in this episode, Miller and Brian definitely know about it, too.
Okay, yes, true. So, basically,
the gang, people we recognize the kids.
From the 100.
Yeah,
the 100. Yeah, what's left of the 100 that we have named characters for. Mm-hmm. They know about it, so, like, what do we do? How are we gonna, you know, figure this out? And then, like, Monty comes up with a light bulb moment of, like, oh, man, like, the Ark survived in space for, like, this many years with elevated radiation, blah, blah, blah. And he was like, we're sitting in our solution. Like, we just, you know, fix up the Ark, we seal it, and we can live here, like we did in space. And they're like, cool, plan. The only problem is, where are they gonna get water? They need, apparently they have enough technology to, like, make food, or they think they can gather enough food for, and I don't know where they get the, I might have missed this, but where do they get the figure of, like, 5 years? They have to spend 5 years in the Ark.
I don't remember. I don't know if there is a reason for that.
Like, we can, you know, I mean, probably, enough food for 5 years.
You know, Raven used her incredible skills in literally every STEM subject to figure out how long till the radiation, like, disperses or whatever.
She's just like science girl. Mm-hmm. And so, right, so the only problem is water. They don't have enough space to store water for 5 years for, you know, I think it's like 300 people or something. That's,
I think it's 500 people in Sky Crew. Okay. Yeah, which also, like, Clark is still like, well, we can't just save Sky Crew. Like, we got to figure out something to do for the Grounders, too. But, like, for now, we will work on this.
Yes. And so they talk about, oh, there's a hydro pump or something, some made up.
It's a hydro generator.
Hydro generator. Some futuristic machine that can make water out of, I guess, nothing. So they're like, we have this machine, but there's only one of them, and it's in Farm Station. And we gotta go. And so that's when they get Brian and Miller involved, because they're like, Brian, you know, Farm Station the best, like, come help us. And he's like, that's not a great idea. That's where all the Asgata who, like, tried to kill all of us for 3 months are living, and I would really rather not. Or no, he doesn't say that. Miller doesn't want him to go. He's like, it's too dangerous. But Brian's like, right. Anyway.
Yeah, and also in this scene, Miller and Brian have this argument about Pike.
Yeah.
where Brian is like mad that Octavia killed Pike, and Miller is like, you know, well, why do you care about it? And Brian is like, he kept me alive for 3 months. Like, you know, he shouldn't have just been murdered. He was trying to protect us, whatever. And then Miller is like, well, then why did you turn against him with us? And Brian is just like, to save your life, like, you dickhead. Like, that part's implied. So yeah, they're already kind of having a fight. And then they both go to get this hydro generator. Even though Miller doesn't want Brian to go, Brian is the only, like, surviving person they know from Farm Station, so he has to go to show them where it is.
So they go, and Brian is like, you know, if we see any of those Asgay, they're like, I'm gonna kill them. And they're like, you can't. We're in a coalition with them, and he's like, I hate this. And they're like, so sorry, but it still means you can't. And so they go, Bellamy leads the charge, basically, and Clark and Raven and Monty, well, the rest of them, basically, are going to stay behind and, you know.
No, Monty goes with them. That's important.
Oh, yes. No, you're true. You're true.
I'm true.
You're right. Monty does go with them. So they go, and they're like, you know, what is it? Staking out or whatever. Mm-hmm. They're looking at the farm station, and they're trying to think of, like, the best way to get in and get the hydro generator and get out. And then, Harper's like, guys, and there's an Asgaida, like, warrior who has a knight, like, an arrow or something to her neck. And then they turn around and they're being, like, ambushed. And Bellamy's like, no problem, I got this, because Rowan gave them Echo gave Bellamy a seal from Rowan that says basically, like, hey, like, these people are cool with Asgaida, like, let them pass, like, they're on a errand for the king, basically. And so Bellamy's like, I have this seal. Like, you need to let us do our business. And they're like, no, son. And so they take him and everyone hostage. And they find out that they're, like, living in Farm Station, which there's a really interesting point where, like, they're walking through the corridors or whatever, and, like, all the lights are on. Mm-hmm. And I think, is it Monty? Oh, it doesn't really matter. But somebody's like, have you ever seen a grounder, you know, work a spaceship before?
Yeah. Like,
this is, you know, this is suspect. And right. So they're taken to the leader of this, you know, not to get into terminology, but the leader of this group, and he's basically, he takes the seal a lot more seriously than his, like, lieutenant does. And so he's like, you know, it's fine, we'll just let them have them, like, get the machine and then get them out of here. So they go to where the machine is, and it's revealed that, like, a bunch of Farm Station people that were presumed dead have been taken as slaves by this group, right, of Asgaida.
So, yeah, there's just, like, a bunch of captured people, mm-hmm, here who are, you know, slaves to the this group of Asgaida, which, like, some of them are just other grounders, but then, yeah, first Brian recognizes, like, a Farm Station person, and they're like, oh shit.
Yeah, and they're like, this is not good, and they're immediately like, we need to do something about this, like, we cannot just leave these people here. And they're kind of, they're almost split 50-50, where they're, you know, they're talking while they're getting the hydro generator, and they're like, we cannot leave these people here. Half of them are like, we can't leave these people here, we need to get them out, and the other half are like, this hydro generator takes precedent, like, it's going to save everyone back in Arcadia, like 500 people and versus like 30 people, basically.
Right. Well, and so, like, yeah, they're like getting the hydro generator and like having this discussion, and just like, first, you know, Brian is like, we have to save these people. And Bellamy is like, I agree, but like, we got to get this machine first. Let's take it out. And then, like, we'll come back and save these people. But then, like, I guess their friend Riley, someone passes them like a note, like, just written on this piece of fabric that says, like, they're moving us tomorrow, help. And so, yeah, then they're like, okay, well, this is now a much more pressing thing. Like, if we walk away from these people now, we might not be able to find them again to save them. And then, like, I don't even remember who, I think it's Bellamy, like, because I think Monty says something about, like, the fact that, you know, they need this hydro generator, and the hydro generator uses, Hydrazine, mm-hmm. our good old friend Hydrazine, which has, you know, helped us out in so many ways before. And Bellamy is just like, we have a bomb. Like, we could use the Hydra generator as a weapon right now to save these people, you know, or we could abandon them and get it back to the Ark. And like you said, it's like 50-50. Like, Monty and Miller are like, we need this machine. We need to take it back. And Harper and Brian are both like, no, we have to save these people. And like, I'm just realizing now that there are two couples here where one member is on a different side of the issue. But like, Harper and Monty don't seem like that, you know, challenge that they have a different opinion here, whereas it's clear that like Miller and Brian are like sharing like heated looks of like, how can you disagree with me on this?
True. And so of course it comes down to Bellamy. They're like, mm-hmm. okay, you gotta break the tie. And you know, it cuts away before we know what their decision is, and there's a shot of them like taking the hydrogen generator out and like walking past all the people who are enslaved, and we're like led to believe that they've chose the hydrogen generator. But then they stop in the hallway outside of like that main room, and Monty's like, they like jostle it or whatever. And Monty's like, careful, it's like, you know, very important. He like kneels down, he starts pressing buttons, and the grounder's like, what are you doing? And then it starts like beeping because it's gonna blow up, and you know, Bellamy and the crew like run for it, and it blows up all the grounders, and it like blows a hole in Farm Station, and then, you know, they have their escape route now. And then they come back to the main room to get everyone who's chained up. And there's the leader guy is still there. And, you know, they subdue him. But then, you know, Brian is like, this is Monty's kill. And Monty looks at him and he's like, this is the man that killed your father. And it's like, oh, shit. And so, like, Monty picks up an axe and he, like, walks over and he looks at the guy, and then he like turns and axes like the chains so that they fall off of everyone's hands. You're just like, god damn, I love Monty so much. Like, he is such a good boy. And then, you know, when everyone's free, they like attack him because he's like their slaver. So
right, I mean, it is like okay, so first of all, this whole plot line, like this whole scene, is like something that I always think of when I think of The Hundred, you know, mm-hmm. and, like, is such just, like, a good encapsulation of, like, what this show is, right? Of this, like, terrible moment of, like, we save this machine, and then, like, 500 people have a future, like, or we save these 30 people now, you know, but there's all these complicating factors. And, yeah, so it's, like, first, like, they see the leader, and so they're, you know, just kind of fighting him so that he doesn't kill them, you know, and then Miller is kind of attacking him, and Brian like pulls him off, and he's like, this isn't your kill, this is Monty's kill, which I'm just like, yikes.
Yeah,
that's the language
that is
being used about grounders. Yeah, so then he's like, Monty, this is the person who killed your father. And then it's kind of like, you know, this moment where you're like, yeah, Monty picks up this axe, and you're like, oh my god, is Monty just gonna cold-blooded murder this man? Like, you know, that does seem kind of out of character for who Monty is. Mm-hmm. Like, he has, you know, obviously been involved in shitty stuff before, but always tried to be more on the peaceful side. And, like, Bellamy says to him, you don't have to do this. And Monty's like, yes, I do. And then he turns and frees the you know, people who were enslaved. Mm-hmm. But then all those people just, like, immediately go and murder the guy in probably a pretty gruesome way. We don't actually see it happen. So but it is, like, this interesting moment, right, where, like, Monty is choosing not to, like, just directly murder this guy. But on the other hand, it's, like, Monty knows it's going to happen when he unleashes those chains, you know? So it's like, it's not like he's being merciful. Like, in fact, it would probably be more merciful for him to just, like, axe the guy in the head. Mm-hmm. So it is, like, this interesting, like, he's not like, oh, vengeance, I have to kill this guy. But he's also not, like, you know, just gonna put him out of his misery, you know?
Mm-hmm. It is an interesting, complicated gesture, for sure.
Yeah.
But, like, your point about, you know, 500 people later or 30 people now, like, it just made me realize, like, the 100 is literally just, like, a giant trolley problem. Like, again and again and again, it's just different variations of the trolley problem.
It is. Oh, my God.
Oh, man. So, yeah. So, they come back to Arcadia. Well, maybe we should fill in what's happening in Arcadia while that's going down. It's basically Clark and Raven arguing about when to tell people. Raven's like, we need more minds on this. What does she keep saying? Crowdsource this problem. Uh-huh. We need everyone to know that this is a problem so that we can get everyone working on a solution. And Clark's like, no, we can't do that. It'd be mass panic. And, you know, Raven makes the very valid point that's like, your dad died so that people would know that their lives are in danger and, like, that, you know, there's a problem, and he wanted, like, transparency, basically. And, like, you're going against what your dad would have wanted. And, you know, and Clark was on his side in that, being part of it, obviously. She leaked the information. I think she helped leak the information. And so, like, she was on that side, but it's now, like, she's in charge, and that's different. And she has, like, a conversation with Jaha about it, where, like, he's like, you know, heavy is the head that lies the crown, or whatever the actual quote is. And, you know, it's interesting because they don't really have, like, a heart-to-heart. They have, like, a, you know, Clark obviously very much dislikes Jaha still for killing her father and for a myriad of other things. Because
Jaha's and like, for Allie and for the culling.
for a lot of things. So she, like, doesn't respect him, right? She thinks he was a bad leader. And basically, he commiserates with her, though. He was like, you know, it just sucks. Being in charge fucking sucks. You have to make these terrible decisions and do these terrible things that you never considered when you wanted to be in charge. You never considered these awful things that you would have to do and the decisions you would have to make. And she, like, kind of grudgingly empathizes
with him. Yeah, yeah.
So, like, it's basically her dilemma of what should I do next. And then when they come back with the hydrogenerator, or without the hydrogenerator, they're like, okay, Raven, you know, super genius. How many people can we sustain without it? And she's like, 100, of course, because
I know.
And so now Clark is faced with another decision to whether, you know, to tell them about this. And so at the end, she has this big speech where she finally tells everyone that, you know, the nuclear fallout's coming in 6 months. But she does not tell them that only 100 people can be on the Ark. And so she gets, you know, 500 hands and minds working on sealing the Ark and hunting and gathering and, you know, supplies and everything. And, you know, Raven kind of makes a comment like, oh, your dad would be really proud. And it's like,
right. Well, so, like, yeah, she has the speech and she, you know, says, like, and we have to work together. And then she literally says, she was like, and I promise that, like, if we work together, we're all going to get through this. Like, I mean, she doesn't just, like, avoid the truth. She straight up lies. And then, like, when she gets off her little soapbox, you know, and, like, Bellamy and Raven are looking at her, she says, sometimes hope is more important than truth. And then that's when Raven is like, yeah, your dad would be so proud.
Yeah. Ooh. But, like, also, can you, like, I don't know what the right answer is, obviously.
No, I mean, like, I don't, you know.
It's a very hard moral problem. But I would also be concerned about mass panic and, like, a lot of people going Jasper's way of, like, you know, well, fuck it.
Yeah, right. People who just give up and then aren't helping you survive. People who, you know, I mean, like, we know what happens later in the season when, like, people discover that, like, yeah, resources are limited and, you know, it just becomes like a bloodbath basically for who is gonna get to, you know, survive. So, like, it totally makes sense. And I mean, like, yeah, I agree. Like, yeah, I don't know how I'd handle that situation if I were Clark. And, like, same thing with, it's like, you know, I feel like I now sitting in my fucking house in, like, modern society where, you know, I was gonna say where my life is not in danger. Well, I live in America in 2020, so, like, anything can happen. But, you know, I can be like, well, yeah, having that hydrogen generator ultimately is more important than, like, saving those 30 people from, you know, continuing to be enslaved and abused and, you know, potentially killed. But also, like, if I were there in that moment, looking at those people's faces, like, I don't know that I could just be like, see ya.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I think I would have been team, let's help these people. Because how could you just walk away?
Yeah.
All right, is there anything else that happened in this episode?
No, I think we about covered everything from this.
Oh, Octavia's outfit. So she's, like, very much, like, like Tomb Raider outfit, and I dig it. It's got like the high ponytail and like the tank top, and it's really doing stuff for me.
Yeah, it is. You know, she's just living her best life as like a spy and assassin.
Octavia has like fully given up giving a fuck, which I like, can appreciate. All right, episode 403.
Yeah, so only 100 people will be able to survive in this. Once again, you know, very symbolically convenient that it's the 100. And Clark is the one who they've decided is in charge of making a list of who gets to be in the Ark when the radiation comes. But she's, like, putting it off because she's like, we're going to find another solution. So then, first, a bunch of grounders show up. Nyko shows up with a bunch of sick grounders, all from Luna's little society. And Avi looks at them and she's like, oh, they have acute radiation sickness. And Luna's like, oh yeah, and all the fish are dying off. And it's like, well, looks like the radiation is coming sooner than we thought. And Raven does, again, her little calculations with all her knowledge and is like, yeah, actually it's going to be 2 months. Like, that we will be able to survive. So the timeline just got very much moved up. So then when Jaha is like, hey, I might know about this bunker made by this cult, this doomsday cult, that's, like, not that far from here. It could sustain thousands of people if it's real. Like, we should check it out. Clark and Bellamy are like, okay, cool, we'll go check that out because that would solve all of our problems.
Right. So, they head over there. And, you know, they're doing research or whatever on this doomsday cult, and it's this guy. It's basically what it sounds like. I don't know if there's, like, anything really cool there, but it's just, you know, end of days, we're gonna, basically a bunch of preppers. They're like, we're gonna survive. So they go to
Like, they were right, you know?
Or whatever they show is like 11 days before the bombs went off.
Right, yeah. Like this cult, I mean, not saying it was a good cult because it was clearly like Scientology kind of shit, but like, they weren't wrong about the end of days.
And I don't think there's like a lot to this. I don't know how much we need to talk about this, but they get to the bunker and they open it up and it's like full of dead bodies because it wasn't properly sealed. So it's useless, basically. It's just a big time waster.
Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, they go through some trial. Well, actually, no, there is one thing I want to talk about this little plot line. Because there's a point where they're like out in the woods looking for the entrance to this bunker. And, I don't know, like Clark and Bellamy kind of, like, have some little discussion, but then Clark, like, walks up ahead to, like, look. And so Bellamy is just with Jaha. And Jaha says, like, you know, she's a leader and, like, leading is very, like, challenging and lonely, but, like, you keep her center. She's lucky to have you. And Bellamy just looks at him. He's like, you got it backwards. And I'm just like, ah!
So good. But also, it's like, they do it for each other. It's not one, you know, or the other. They keep each other in check.
They keep each other centered. Okay, anyway, we'll talk, okay, we're so gonna come back to Bellark at the end of this episode, so we can maybe focus on, should we talk about what's happening in Polis?
Yeah.
So the flame is stolen.
Oh, right. Yes, so the flame is stolen. Rowan comes to Octavia, you know, everyone solve her a problem. And it's funny because he's like, you know, can we talk in private when he sees Indra? And she was like, if you can't say it to Indra, you can't say it to me. And I was just like, fuck yes. Mm-hmm. Like, I love Octavia's, like, Octavia's like one of those, like, loyal people, like, ever.
Yeah.
So he tells Indra and Octavia that the flame's stolen. I need you to, like, find out who it was. I'm pretty sure it was one of the flame keepers. And I need you to get it back for me. And I need you to kill the person who took it, basically. And she was like, cool, boss, gotcha. So
when they talk about, like, Octavia's gotten this reputation in Polis as, like, this assassin. Yeah, Sky Ripa, death from above. Yeah.
So fucking cool. I love assassin Octavia. Like, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
Like, her moral decline is also really sad, but it's so badass. It's awesome. Yes. So, I don't remember do you remember what their lead is? Like, why did they start looking in this?
I don't know. I mean, he's like, it's probably a flamekeeper.
Yeah.
And so she finds a flamekeeper, and it's this girl, and they, like, get into a fight, and the girl is like, oh, like, nice technique, I recognize it. And Octavia's kind of like, what the hell? And then when Octavia, like, gets the upper hand and is about to kill this girl, this woman, like, Indra shows up and she's like, stop. And Octavia's like, she has the flame. And Indra's like, she's my daughter.
Bum, bum, bum.
Bum, bum, bum.
So soap opera about it, but yeah, she's my daughter. And so basically, Guy is a big disappointment to Intra, because she was supposed to be, like, basically, like, her second and, like, learn how to lead tree crew and be a warrior. But Gaia is very religious, and so she took to, like, her studies and her you know, to be a flame keeper, and she's just, like, very devout, and Indra hates it. And basically Gaia hates her for hating it, so it's, you know, family drama. But Octavia's like, listen, we don't have time for that right now. Like, we need the flame. You have to give it to us. And Guy's like, there's no way, because this is, like, literally almost like my deity. I'm not going to give this to you. And they go back and forth. But then there are groups of grounders who are kind of looting all of the tech in Polis that they can find, because they now are, for obvious reasons, are very distrusting of all technology, because they blame, you know, that for the chip. And so they're just basically rounding up all technology they can find and destroying it. And they come pounding on, like, the sanctuary door, and they're like, if they get the flame, they're going to destroy it. Like, there's no way. Like, it almost looks exactly like the chips. Like, there's no way that they're not going to destroy this. And so they come up with a sneaky plan. And, I mean, very conveniently, Gaia has a necklace that has, like, basically a replica of the flame in it. And so they swap it out, and they let them have the fake flame, and they smash it. So they keep the real flame. And I can't remember why Gaia agrees to let them keep it. Oh, no, she doesn't.
She doesn't. Gaia keeps... So, yeah, so Gaia keeps the real flame.
Right.
And Octavia, basically, in order to protect Gaia, because she knows that that's what Indra would want, she kills some other guy.
One of the rioting guys.
And, brings his head to Rowan, and brings the smashed up fake flame, and it's just like, oh yeah, this guy stole it, but it got destroyed, so that's that.
And it's so interesting, because, like, Rowan acts, like, kind of disgusted with her that she would, like, do this, like, kill this man or whatever, but it's also like, you asked her to. Like, he's trying to act all high and mighty, but it's also like, okay, Rowan, you have plenty of blood on your hands too. Like, I don't know where you're trying to come from.
So then also, while this is going on, we check back in with Murphy and Amori, and they're, like, having trouble finding food, which we know is because of radiation, but they don't know that. And so Murphy's like, I'll just go steal some food from Arcadia. So he shows up in Arcadia, and then he eavesdrops on Raven and Abby and discovers that, like, shit's really bad. It's only going to be a couple months, and, like, you know, Sky Crew... only some of Sky Crew will be able to survive in the Ark. And he also overhears that Abby is like, I want to use our anti-radiation medication on Luna's people. And Raven is like, no, you can't. That's a waste. And, like, we need to save it for our people, because you don't even know that it would help them. So Murphy overhears this. And then when he steals his food, he also steals some medicine. And then he goes to Medbay and gives it to Abby and is like, here, I stole this for you so that you could use it on the grounders. And Abby's like, oh, John, I'm glad you're back. Like, I knew that you were good. And, like, gives it to a child. And I, you know, when this was happening, had the thought of, like, oh, this is, like, you know, this nice narrative mirroring of this idea that, like, well, his dad died stealing medicine for him, you know, and now he's stealing medicine. Like, that's kind of cool. And then, like, Jackson pointed that out, and I was like, okay, well, it's not cool anymore when a character just says it out loud.
I agree, but I had also forgotten about John's dad, so, like, I appreciated the reminder. So I was, like, one of the dumb people that need to be caught up.
Yeah.
I do think it was a cool parallel. And interesting because it goes against Murphy's nature. Like, why stick his neck out for these people? But it was also, like, I think it was just the fact that it was, like, a sick kid. Like, yeah, I think a pool that is, okay, like, his only heartstring.
See, I don't think that's true, and here's why.
Okay.
Because, well, first of all, we didn't talk about this, which I guess we kind of maybe should mention, is that in the earliest scene when you see Murphy and Amori in the cave, and they're talking about Polis, and Amori seems, like, kind of, like, mad about Murphy's relationship with Antari, and Murphy is like, I didn't have a choice.
Yeah.
And so that was, like, ultimately, I think the message got across of he's like, I was coerced into sex. Please do not dislike me for it.
Yeah.
But then he goes back to Amori and he's like, hey, so it turns out actually we should, like, go to Arcadia because, like, we need to be on the right side of the doors when the radiation comes. And Amori is, like, immediately on board. She's like, so we got to show up and start being useful to them.
Mm-hmm.
And Murphy goes, yeah, I've started working on Abby already.
Oh, I can't. Okay, I missed that part.
Yeah.
I don't know. I like to.
I mean, it could be both.
People. It could be a little bit of both.
It could be both. But it was, I mean, like, I felt like that line was this kind of twist, right? If you just think, like, mm-hmm. oh, right, like, Murphy has a heart, like, he did this. And then when he just says, like, I'm working on Abby already, it's like, oh, shit. Or was he just trying to get on her good side so that they have a higher chance of, you know, being allowed in the bunker or in the Ark?
Right, but you could also make the argument, like, getting, well, I guess inaction wouldn't get Raven on his side. And also, Raven just really hates him and Abby.
Right, right. Raven is never going to bash her.
All right. Makes sense. But, yeah, so then, you know, they give the child the medicine, but in a very, very sad scene, the child dies. And Raven comes in, she starts, like, accusing. She's like, oh my gosh, you stole the radiation or whatever. And Murphy's trying to be like, it's not a good time. Come back later.
Yeah, and, child is dying. Please leave.
Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, Abby's like, we only wasted one dose. Like, don't, you know, here's the rest of your precious medicine or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And Raven sees that Murphy stole a bunch of food. And she's like, really, Murphy? Like, once a cockroach, always a cockroach.
Yeah.
Just like, oh, it's so good. But I thought there was something else.
Well, so then basically, by the end of the episode, all of Luna's people have died.
Yes.
Except for Luna. And Luna not only is still alive, but is recovering. So that's this kind of, like, maybe sort of, you know, Hail Mary at this very mm-hmm. last moment of, like, wait a minute, if Nightblood is, like, more resistant to radiation, like, can this be a solution somehow?
Yes.
But then the only other thing that I have in my notes is talking about the list.
Yes, the list. So.
Okay.
Clark finally stops putting it off. She sits down. She writes the list. We see her write down number 98. And then she hesitates and she looks over and it's just her and Bellamy is, like, sleeping on the couch after their uh-huh. big bunker adventure. And she looks at him for, like, a long time and then she writes his name down. And it's very touching. And then she sees, like, the last slot, number 100, and she, like, kind of starts to break down. And Bellamy, you know, wakes up and walks over and he sees his name on the list. And he says, if my name's on that list, your name's on that list.
Yeah.
And then he was like, write it down. And she just, like, shakes her head. She can't do it. So he takes the pen out of her hand.
Yeah, he's like, write it or I will.
Yes. And he takes the pen out of her hand and he writes her name. And it's just so good. Oh, it's so good.
It's just, yeah, no, just, I was like, this is the most romantic scene I have ever seen in my life. Like, her glancing over at his sleeping form and then writing his name, him getting up, him saying, you know, if I'm on that list, you're on that list. And then, like, the whole list being in her handwriting and then just her name at the very end being in his handwriting. And then, like, she's still crying. And he, like, puts his hand on her shoulder to comfort her. And then she, like, puts her hand on top of his. I was just like, oh, my God.
What this show does, like, okay, it also tortures me, right? Because this is, like, the most slow burn shit I've ever seen in my entire goddamn life. And it's driving me a little bit insane. But also, what they do so well with it is, like, building intimacy without... Yes. romance and without yes. physical intimacy, like the like their relationship is so intimate without being those things, and that's fascinating and like so well done, and it's just right. so good.
It's like by making it like so slow burn and yes. just like, but they do it so yeah exactly, and it's not in like a like teasing way. It's not like they're constantly like, oh, look at these two attractive people like flirting with each other. It's like, no, they're just building the most strong and intimate connection just of two human beings. Oh my God.
Right? And like, yeah, and the fact that it is genuine, it's not will they, won't they. It's like, oh right. man, these two people are like, you could just watch them fall in love. And it's just like, incredible. I can't get over it. And if they don't get together in season 7, I'm gonna kill someone.
I mean, like, okay. I'm doubtful, but okay.
Oh, don't say that to me, Jenna.
Okay, well, we can talk about this more
okay.
off the air. But anyway, and so, like, they finish that, and then she finishes writing this list, and then she just folds it up and sticks it in a drawer, and I'm like, why on earth would you say, like, you are being so guarded about the information that only 100 people would survive. Why would you make a list with 100 names and then not keep it on your person at all fucking times?
I thought the same exact thing. I was like, what are you, Clark Griffin, what are you doing? You know, Murphy's Law, everything that can go wrong will go wrong. Like, Jesus yeah. Christ.
Yeah. Anyway, anything else? Any last thoughts?
I just want to say Raven's quote of, like, you know, basically they're arguing this entire thing, like, her and yeah. Clark. But Clark is like, you know, this is really hard. Like, you don't have to do this. And Clark and Raven's like, yeah, I'm a little busy, like, stealing a ship and making it livable. And she was like, you know, deciding who lives and dies is your specialty. And I'm just like, oh, shit.
And Raven, like, Raven says that, and, like, no one even disagrees. Like, Clark isn't like, hey, it's like... Yeah, that's true.
And then the only other note that I made was, I can't believe Miller's dad is still alive. It's like almost everyone else's parents are dead. Like, except for Clark and Miller. Like, I'm pretty sure everyone else's parents are dead.
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh,
man. All right, well, thank you so much for listening to A Bit Much.
We'd like to thank Remember and Meredith Stein for our lovely logo.
You can find us on the internet. Our Twitter's at @abitmuchpodcast. Our email is abitmuchpodcast@gmail.com. And thank you again. My name is Jenna.
And I'm Megan. And Jenna, do you have a quote? Because I don't have a quote.
Oh, that's a great question. I only had there was only one quote that was, like, sort of funny.
Then go for it, because I got nothing.
Okay, well, again, it's not great because it does require some context, but mm-hmm. when they're talking about, you know, the ecological collapse, the fact that radiation is coming, so fish are dying and there's not as many bugs, and Bellamy just goes, what are the things that eat the fish and bugs gonna eat now? I was like, that's how I feel in our current world, too, Bellamy.
Like, bitch, me too? The fuck?
Yeah.